Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bethanelli.
And I'm Melanie Bethanelli.
Melanie, let's start with some feedback we got from our last episode.
Oh, wow.
I had talked about taking the kids, four of them, to the Scouts Klondike Derby. And we speculated that Klondike Derby was a Northern Scout thing.
Uh-huh.
But we are wrong. And in fact, B sent an email with a link to the Longhorn Council, which is from your neck of the woods.
Longhorn would be Texas,
yes.
I'm guessing.
Yes. The Longhorn Council is located between Waco and Austin. So really your neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah.
And they had something called, in fact, it was next weekend. They have a Klondike Derby coming up at Camp Tahuahaya.
What?
I'm not trying to pronounce that. Tahuaya. Tahuaya.
Tahuaya.
I would
think Tahuaya.
Ahoy, ahoy.
Okay.
So, anyway, it is a Klondike Derby and a traditional scouting winter camping and outdoor skills competition. They have sleds. The sleds are wheeled. Like ours had wheels that take off.
Ours had wheels.
Yes, but ours are wheels until it's time for the race, and then they take off. But there is not a chance of snow where the, in
there's
the
a minuscule chance.
Of a dusting of snow.
Not a zero.
But they also could have a Klondike sled or a wheeled miniature Conestoga or Prairie Schooner wagon, which would be kind of awesome. But you know, it sounds like they do a combination of two separate events that we have. So in this winter, we have the Klondike Derby. And in the summer, they do something called the Chuck Wagon.
The Chuck Wagon Derby?
Right. No, just the Chuck Wagon.
Oh, I thought it was Chuck Wagon Derby.
Well, it sort of is. Actually, there's no race. They don't. Do they race the wagons? I don't think they race the Chuck Wagons. But it's apart from that, which I can't. It's been so long since actually they had a Chuck Wagon. I don't remember. But apart from that, it's kind of the same thing. Each unit, either a patrol or pack, has a wagon, and during the day the wagon carries their gear and they go from station to station practicing scouting skills.
Right.
It's the same Klondike and Chuck Wagon, and this sounds like they just do them both at once. The participants can serve as the draft animal of their choice: dogs, horses, oxen, or mules, depending on the vehicle they bring. So they pull the sleds or wagons.
Acting as dogs reminds me of the Swallows and Amazons kids when they are in winter holiday when they make the sleds.
Oh, yes.
And they call themselves sled dogs.
Yes. Man, those the sleds on the ice, those things sounded awesome.
It sounded like so much fun.
Especially with the sail up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty cool. So they can do Conestoga wagons or prairie schooners. So what's the difference, you say?
I was going to ask, what's the difference between a Conestoga and a prairie schooner? Because I
well, let me inform
know.
You with the help of the Longhorn Council, which says Conestoga wagons were huge freight wagons with an arching weather cover or bonnet developed in Pennsylvania by descendants of German colonists and used for hauling freight throughout the East and on the Santa Fe Trail to New Mexico. For prairie schooners, so the Conestoga wagons were too heavy for their draft animals on most rugged western trails. The much smaller prairie schooners were developed specifically for overland travel and saw wide use throughout many of America's western migrations, easy for me to say, to the latest gold rush fields. Many travelers simply retrofitted their standard farm wagons with a canvas bonnet. The popular Trek carts from the early days of scouting were a single-axle adaptation of the famous Frontier wagons and their trademark canvas bonnets.
Oh, cool.
To be honest, I did not know that distinction, but that makes sense.
Neither did I, honestly.
And you are from the Conestoga wagon country. Shame on you.
Yeah, sure.
That's kind of cool. I'm fascinated by scouting in different parts of the country and the different ways they experience it. Right. So it's kind of cool that they thank you, Beat, for sending that along.
Yes, very, very enlightening.
Yes. All right. So let's talk about what we've been doing. So you had dinner with a friend. And so people who've been listening to SQPN shows for a long time will perhaps remember The Secrets of Battlestar Galactica, which was one of the first shows I started listening to back when Battlestar Galactica was on. Gosh, 10 years ago, probably more than 10 years ago.
More than 10 years ago.
And that show was done by our friends, Jeff and Zena Liss. And we've become friends with Jeff and Zena, which is fun.
Yeah, Zena's fourth child, Emma, was born within a couple of weeks of a couple of weeks after Lucy was born. And Emma and Lucy have been best friends and grown up together since the time they were crawling babies when we met up at one of the CNMC conferences.
The 2010 in Boston. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
No, it could have been 2010.
Because it was the second
CNMC. Lucy was born in 2013.
Right. So, okay. So,
Zena and I did meet in the 2010 one, which was when Ben was a crawling baby. And I think Zena had Myra.
Right. Ben crawling around. That's who I'm remembering.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
Zena and I met up for dinner. We haven't seen each other in far too long.
Well, before the pandemic, probably.
Before the pandemic. Yeah. Unfortunately. And it was lovely. We met up at a Greek restaurant in Dedham. Which, if you live in the area, I highly recommend. It's
in Dedham Square. It's Cucina
Estario, I think. I always mess up the name. It starts with an E-S-T.
Estiatorio. E-S-T-I-A-T-O-R-I-O. Estiatorio.
Yes. Super, super good Greek food.
Yes.
We shut down the Greek restaurant. Then we headed over to the bookstore. And then we shut down the bookstore. And then we stood in the parking lot and talked until we were icicles. And then we said a good night and went home. It was a really, really fun night. So good to see Zena again.
Cool. Oh, that's the Amazon. That's, you went to Legacy Place.
Okay. Yes.
I see. Yeah. That's, that is news since the last time I've been to Legacy Place again, because, you know, we've been in hibernation for the last 2 years. So cool. Oh, well, and that's great that you went and saw Zena and, you had a night out. That was a lot of fun. I spent the night in with the kids. We had pizza and wings and then we said prayers. And they didn't report on me that I did. I kind of made funnies during the prayers.
You always make funnies during the prayers.
Yes, I know. Some of the phrases are just funny.
You are not a great influence sometimes.
Yes. And then they went to bed and I watched something. I forget.
And I came home way after they were in bed.
Yes, you did. And then that was Thursday night. No, that was Friday night.
That was Friday night.
So, yes. Because before that, Thursday night into Friday, we had that storm that blew through and around four or five o'clock in the morning, the power blinked, which because we have smart lights, when it blinks, the lights come on.
Oh my gosh. That's so annoying.
Well,
I was sound asleep and dreaming, and then suddenly in my dream, something was bright, was stabbing me in the eyes, and I woke up, and the lights were on, like,
so
bright.
There, you have an option. You can have the lights either stay off when the power comes back.
Which is annoying if you are awake and you want the lights to be on.
The lights
to
be on, because then you don't know the power's back. Or you can have them come on. So in the kids' rooms, the lights stay off when the power comes back.
I think they should stay off in all the bedrooms, frankly.
Well, I suppose. Well, they came back on. Well, the problem is you can't turn them off until everything reboots the system.
So it's not only did the lights come on, but they're on.
They
and
stay
on
for about
on
5 minutes until the Wi-Fi restarts and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so annoying.
So I get all the lights off. We went back to bed. And then the power went off again, just for good. And then, so that was, maybe within a half hour after that. So I was up. But at that point, I'm like, I can't sleep now because I had a full day of work I had needed to do that I couldn't do. So I got up, took a cold shower, And then I got the generator out of the shed and got that going. So that's the first time we've used the generator for a power outage, which it worked out well.
Yeah.
I was able to plug in the toaster oven, the tea kettle, and the Keurig. So we had coffee and bagels, and that was good. People had hot food and hot drink.
Very important.
Also, to the benefit, the weather, it was like 60 degrees out.
It had actually been so warm when I went to bed Thursday night that I was like hot and pulling off blankets. So the house didn't get cold, fortunately.
Right. So after we were done with breakfast, I plugged in the freezer to the generator, and then I left that going because we had taken stuff out of the freezer. And if you open up a stand-up freezer, it gets you lose all the cold. You really got to plug it back in. So I plugged it back in, and then after a while, you took the kids for a walk, and you could talk about that in a second. But I was thinking, I really ought to plug in the fridge. But plugging the fridge is such a pain because you got to pull the whole fridge out. And I'm pulling this fridge out, and it's really a tight quarters. And I finally get it out, and I plug it in. Literally less than 5 minutes later, the power came back.
Of course.
But so it came back around like 11:30, close to noon. And then I had to rush to get work done. I had a board meeting. It was a crazy afternoon. And that's why I ended up getting pizza instead of cooking dinner, because you were going out and I totally spaced. And it was 5:30, I think, by the time I was like, wait a minute, who's making dinner? And yeah, so but you took the kids for a walk.
We went for, yeah, it was really, I mean, it's hard for them to get schoolwork done when the power is out. For the older kids, like, Bella couldn't do any work because everything, her checklist and is on her computer.
Right. Everything's online on Google Docs and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
And so we took the morning off. We went for a nice long walk. It was good. Then when the power came back on, I gave the kids the option to do school and earn screen time, or you can skip school, but you're not going to get time on the screen. And
yeah,
Ben opted to earn screen time by doing his schoolwork. Anthony and Lucy opted to just take the morning off,
take the afternoon off and the morning off.
We did actually do read alouds in the afternoon.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't complete no school day, but it was, okay. It was a lighter school day. It was nice.
So
and Bella was glad the power came back on in time for her to do her D&D virtual campaign.
Right. She does the D&D group online with the kids from homeschooling group. So, and then today, Sunday, was Anthony's birthday. So
he's 11.
He is 11 now. And so got up, opened presents, and that was done relatively early, which was nice, which means because in order to open presents, they had to get dressed for a church.
I am finally savvy enough to realize that if I hold out the stick of you get to open your presents, I can get them
carrot.
Yes, thank you. Oh my gosh. If I hold out the dangling carrot of opening presents, then they will actually get dressed. They really resist getting dressed on Sundays. I don't know why.
It is like the mass is at 10:30. We have to leave the house by 10:10.
I cannot get them to get dressed before like 10 o'clock.
Oh my gosh. It is like pulling, like it is such a hassle. Although but the last 2 weeks have been much better. Although we almost left without Ben today.
Poor Ben. On Saturday night, he had insomnia and he came in at midnight and said, I can't sleep. He'd been laying in bed.
And he's one of the first to bed. Like he goes to bed early.
Yeah, he'd been laying in bed and just now sometimes he thinks he hasn't gone to sleep when he actually did drift off and then woke back up again. So right. I don't know. But he was really tired this morning and I was chatting with the girls and we were having a really interesting conversation. And then I realized, oh, it's time to get ready to go. And so I was like, OK, everybody get your coats on and your boots on and everything.
And I was in the car warming it up because we've determined that it's best if I don't do the trying to herd the ducks out the door. Because that never ends well. So it's better if I just go start the car and wait in the car.
Right. And somehow because I was distracted by continuing my conversation with the girls, I totally forgot to herd Ben along. So I get the other four kids out the door. I get myself out the door last and lock the door behind me, and I'm heading to the car. I pull the van sliding door shut. But as I'm pulling it shut, the kids are like, wait,
Where's Ben?
What about Ben?
And then at the door opens to the house, and there's Ben appears, shoeless, like, hey, can you guys leave without me?
I honestly thought he was in the car.
So, I mean, I knew he wasn't in the car. So we weren't going to leave without him. Although
if it had been up to me, I would have left without Ben. Oh, my goodness.
We have in the past threatened that if you do not get your shoes on right now, you're staying here alone while we go to church. I thought that was maybe that's what was happening this week. But no. So you went in, we got him together and got him out to the car.
Poor kid.
Poor guy. But yeah, so we all got to Mass this week. So yeah, Anthony's birthday. What did we get him? It was not the best present pile this year for various reasons. Partly because we got him some duplicate gifts. We already have that book. I already have that. We have three of that Lego set.
I had him sit down in front of the Amazon wish list and tell me what he already had and didn't have, what he wanted and didn't want. But I did it like a week before I actually sat down to order. But he had vetoed several things, and I dutifully took them off the list. So I assumed that everything that was still on the list was something that he would want for his birthday.
Yeah.
But it was a couple of the other kids who were like, no, we already have that book. Anthony himself didn't remember that we already had it. So that one was kind of on him. But then the Lego set was one that he didn't have and he didn't mind getting. But the girls and Ben each had the same set.
And they all said, well, we don't mind getting duplicate sets. We like having the sets.
But I think that he would have been a little bit happier to get. He didn't seem disappointed.
Right.
But I think he might have been a little happier if he'd got a completely new set that nobody had before. But I think he also recognized, and this was actually really mature of him, I think he recognized that there were very few sets that we didn't already have.
We have pretty much all of the Star Wars Lego sets that we can afford.
So I think he was resigned, and he was not super disappointed. He did not seem disappointed.
He didn't go for any of the Marvel Lego sets, huh?
You know, we looked at a lot of Marvel Lego sets. There wasn't anything that was really great.
Yeah.
The Marvel Lego sets are kind of lame.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
That's disappointing. Father Andrew was showing me that he got a new Mandalorian Lego set for Christmas that he hasn't put together yet. That doesn't seem too expensive, so maybe we should look at that.
And he's probably already have it.
Yeah, and Anthony's due for a new bike.
Right, so I think that's going to happen soon.
Yeah, we'll make that part of his presents too. So then we went out to dinner, as is our tradition, as you probably know if you've listened for any length of time, is we take that the child whose birthday it is gets to choose where to go for dinner. I know different people have different traditions. Like my sister, they have 8 kids, so it would be prohibitively expensive for the entire family to go out to dinner. So every time. And because there's so many of them, there would be many dinners. So they have it where the child and one parent go out to dinner, and they usually go to a fairly fancy place for dinner. And
the kid gets to pick which parent and which.
And where to go for dinner. Which is a nice tradition, actually. And maybe as they get older, we'll do that. But ours is we all go. Anthony picked Chili's.
Which we've done a lot before.
Yeah.
It's a sort of family favorite.
He loves the chips and salsa. And he loves the pepperoni pizza at Chili's.
It's a very mediocre pepperoni pizza.
But... yeah. He just likes Chili's. Yeah. We've decided that from now on, we're going to try to dissuade the children from choosing Chili's, at least our Chili's here and where we are. It has gone downhill.
It's definitely gone downhill.
The menu, corporately, the menu is really a lot shorter than it was. It's
very limited.
Yeah.
I feel like there's not nearly as much selection. My sister used to work at Chili's back in the day, and I used to enjoy going there. Like, it wasn't the best food ever, but I used to enjoy dinners out at Chili's. And I feel like now there's just not much. I kind of look over the menu and I'm like, there's nothing really here that I'm really excited about.
There isn't a whole lot of like Southwestern or Tex-Mex sort of stuff on it. There's still fajitas and there's a few tacos and things, but not much.
It was never hugely Tex-Mex.
I guess, but yeah. I mean, it's called Chili's. It should be more Southwestern than it is. But in any case, the service was like a lot of places. It's hard to blame that. I mean, most places are understaffed now.
Right.
But the service wasn't great. Like, we got there and they're like, well, we just seated a group of eight and you're seven. So it's going to be 40 minutes before we can seat you. And it's like, oh,
that's
I know. And we were the only people waiting. Like, everybody else who came in got seated right away. I was just like annoyed that we ended up having to wait for 40 minutes. And then when we got seated, like, it just wasn't great. It was, you know, they brought the drinks, half full milks for the kids, and we didn't get drinks again until we asked for them at the end of the meal. You know, it just took forever.
Right. She was way too busy to ask us if we needed refills on drinks.
And like I said, I get it. Most restaurants are understaffed, so it's hard to blame them. But it just seems like the last few times we've been to Chili's have been disappointing. So I'm going to try to, like, I would rather go to, like I mentioned before, our local Mexican restaurant, Sombreros, which is great. And it's a family run place. They're not going to be understaffed because it's a family, you know, and the food is better and all that. So maybe Sophie will go there for her birthday, which is coming up in a week or so, 10 days, which means you get to buy birthday presents.
Oh, goodness. if Anthony was hard to buy for, Sophie's even.
Oh, even harder. For. Yeah. 14-year-old girls. What do you buy?
I was going to say 13, but she's going to be 14.
Yeah, non-girly 14-year-old girls.
She is not a girly girl.
She's not a stereotype.
She already got, like, new sheets for Christmas. She doesn't really love clothes, and she's got a Kindle. She's got an iPad. Mm-hmm. She has headphones for her Kindle. She doesn't need a lot of stuff or want a lot of stuff. She's not very materialistic. She's not very acquisitive. So it's kind of hard. And she's not really toys. I'll probably end up getting her some Star Wars Black figures because she and Bella do collect those and play with them. So those are usually pretty safe, like Bad Batch Black figures.
Also, maybe some camping stuff.
Yeah, some scouty campy stuff. Yeah, maybe.
I think that might be a good choice.
I mean, clothing. Yeah, maybe some t-shirts or
t-shirts. Yes, and maybe shoes. Anyway, we'll figure that out. We'll do it on the show. Sorry, folks. Let's talk about food for Anthony's birthday. You made him. He requested
a cheesecake. Anthony loves cheesecake. In fact, I was looking at our Facebook memories. He asked for a cheesecake when he was five. So this is a long-standing Anthony tradition.
Yes.
But the thing about Anthony is he likes different flavored cheesecakes, but he gets very anxious about the cheesecake sampler plate because he can't try all of them. He can't have all of them and he can't choose among them. And so we usually end up getting stuck with just the plain New York cheesecake, but he really likes other flavors. So he wanted a chocolate amaretto cheesecake with raspberry swirl. Like, this is like the ultimate. And I am like, oh, yeah, I love the way you think. Like, chocolate amaretto is one of my favorite. And so is raspberry swirl. And you put them all together. And this is like the ultimate cheesecake. So good. So I decided to make it with a chocolate crust. I went to the store to buy more cream cheese because we were running low.
And it is the great cream cheese paucity of 2022.
So while I was there, I was looking around thinking, well, I could get Oreos for my crust. I could buy a pre-made crust, but those are never as good. But Anthony had mentioned the possibility of getting chocolate graham crackers. And so I went to the cracker and cookie aisle and they didn't have chocolate graham crackers, but they had chocolate Teddy Grahams. And I'm thinking, this could work. So I got a box of Teddy Grahams and I pulverized them. And I added like a quarter cup of almond flour, a couple tablespoons of sugar and some butter. And that made the best crust. So good. Slightly nutty from the almond flour. Very richly chocolatey from the Teddy Grahams. And mm-hmm. that butter just kind of, oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Then it was a chocolate cheesecake, so it melted some chocolate chips in and added amaretto plus some almond
extract.
Yeah. Because I think the amaretto by itself doesn't quite have enough almond kick to it. So I did both. And then I made a raspberry swirl. So I had to look at two different recipes, one for the raspberry swirl cheesecake and one for the chocolate amaretto cheesecake, because nobody does both.
Not until now. Now everybody will do it.
Right. And the raspberry swirl cheesecake I found, had you mix seedless raspberry jam with lemon juice to kind of thin it out and then swirl that into the cheesecake. So I did that. We didn't have seedless raspberry jam, but we had the raspberry jam from our local farmer's market, ladies, which is not super seedy. Like, it's got seeds in it, but they're not hard and crunchy.
Yeah.
They're very unobtrusive.
I like the idea of mixing it with a little bit of lemon juice, because the straight up jam would be too sweet.
Right. The lemon juice cut the sweet and it made it a little bit thinner, so it was easier to swirl. That worked really well. The swirl wasn't really visible, and that was okay, but the flavor was there. Like, you would get nice little pockets of raspberries popping out at you as you ate, and that was perfect. And then after I'd cooked the cheesecake and cooled it, I topped it with a chocolate amaretto ganache. So you just melt chocolate chips and heat up some heavy cream, and you mix those together with a little bit more amaretto and another dash of almond extract. And I sloshed that around on top. Now, I definitely needed a ganache because I overfilled my pan.
As you always do when you make a cheesecake.
Oh, my Lord. I need to get a bigger cheesecake pan. And I know which one I need to get, because my friend Rebecca, every time I complain about this, says, you need to get this cheesecake pan. And she gives me the Amazon link and I never remember to buy it. And this time I'm going to. I knew it was going to overflow. I even put some of the excess batter into a little ramekin to make a little mini cheesecake, and it still overflowed.
Oh, yeah, it way overflowed. There was way too much.
There was way too much batter.
Yeah.
And it said 9-inch cheesecake, but and I used a 9-inch pan.
No, you were also combining two different recipes, so that would have changed some things.
Right. I mean, there was only like a third of a cup of raspberry jam, so it shouldn't have like overflow. And I took out more than a third a cup of the batter.
But the way it cooks might be like the lift that you get from the different things might be different too.
I don't know. Anyway, yeah. it was not a pretty cheesecake. It was kind of
It wasn't a disaster. It just kind of rose up in giant crags.
It was kind of a fluffy cheesecake monster thing. but the taste was phenomenal.
And if looks mattered, you could have carved off some of the risen bits, the edges,
right,
because the ganache is going to cover all that.
Yeah, if I'd wanted to make it look pretty, like if I was taking it to an actual party, I could have, carefully sliced away the excess on the edges and smoothed out the top with a knife and then poured the ganache over it. And that would have covered a multitude of sins. And nobody would have noticed.
No one would have ever known.
Yeah, but it was really good. I was very pleased with the way this came out, and I want to make it again.
Yeah, no, it was really good. Really, I mean, very rich dessert, frankly, you know, honestly. I think a small slice did me well.
Oh, yeah, you did not need a very big slice of this. It was super rich.
But super good. Like, man, if you like it, any of those flavors in the combination, it was really good.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, so. So that's what we've been cooking. We've made some other things, too, but that's the only interesting one to talk about this time. Let's talk about, because we're halfway through, let's talk about what we've been reading or watching, because neither of us have finished a book this week. We are both getting really slow at reading stuff lately. But
so slow.
I'm
juggling two different books and not making fast progress on either one.
I'm hopeful to finish the book I'm reading this week, so that's for sure. So we were fans of the first season of a Netflix show called Raising Dion.
It's
about
so good.
A single mom who's got a little boy who she's a widow raising a little boy who starts having powers. And he's like, I think, 6 in the first season.
I thought he was 5 or 6 in the first season.
Yeah.
It felt like he jumped more than a year of age, because he's 8 in the.
Yeah, he's more. He's like Well, it's been 2 years since the first season, so it was pre-2020, pre-pandemic, so it's been a while. In any case, he has these powers. Other people are starting to show powers. She's trying to figure out what's going on and why he's got it. It's got something to do with how his dad died. And
I liked the characters.
It was a huge twist in the first season.
I loved the show.
Yeah.
I really liked the take of, I don't know, the parent. It was as much a show about like her being a parent, a single mom, as it was about him having superpowers. And I really liked the story, the characters.
There was something about her. I really liked her as a person, the mom. There was some character trait in her, something in her that really was like, I really like her. She's a good person.
Right. Her story, backstory was really interesting because she was a dancer and kind of not a very serious student and kind of didn't exactly know who she was outside of dancing. And she'd kind of given up dancing when she got pregnant and wanted to go back to it, but couldn't. And I really liked the fact that she had something about her that she was passionate about and she loved that was not just being a mom, but that she was also willing to make the sacrifice to be a mom. You know, she gave up on her dancing in order to be a mom because she needed to do the hard thing. I really liked, I don't know, that was part of her character that I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got in a few of the episodes to dance, and her joy in the dance and her movement. It was just really nice to see a mom who had a passion and there was still room in her life for her passion.
Yes.
I think that was part of it. It was nice. You know, you don't get to see that very often.
Right. And her relationship with her son was good.
She was such a good mom. Right. Not that she never
perfect.
Made perfect.
Yeah.
Not that she made mistakes or was perfect, but she was a good mom doing her best in a hard situation, making some tough calls, who really had a great rapport with her son.
Yes. So first season ended with the expected resolution of with a big bad guy, not a complete 100%. Everything is solved and we're done now, but a resolution. Second season just came out on Netflix. And so we've only seen the first episode so far. Oh, and then there's a little girl in the wheelchair. Hope.
Esperanza.
Hope. Yeah. Esperanza, who is just fantastic. She is just, right. She's an awesome little spitfire.
Dion's best friend. She is. Yeah, she's. I love the actress.
She has cerebral palsy or something like that.
Really talk about what her diagnosis is.
She has some sort of degenerative disease. The actress herself does. And so that character does. But she's a little spitfire. She's kind of awesome. And
she becomes sort of Dion's coach and cheerleading squad. And she's such a good friend character.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also has one other friend who
was previously a bully, but has become a friend.
Right. And yeah. I liked that character arc, too. The bully becomes the friend.
So the second season begins. So now instead of having the big baddie being this supernatural figure, the Crooked Man, who still does kind of exist, but I don't want to spoil anything. But there's a bad guy, quote unquote, who is another kid. And that's not really a spoiler because you find that out like at the very beginning of the first episode of this second season. And it's kind of refreshing because also the corporation that's involved in all this is this big company we thought were the bad guys last season. And now they're not the bad guys.
Or maybe not. It's interesting.
This is a question about it, but it doesn't seem to be following the trope and cliche. So far, so good. Again, it's the first episode, so we haven't seen much of the second season, so we'll see how that goes. But
so far, I like it.
Yeah, we both enjoy that.
And we get the mom trying to decide whether or not she wants to date, and that's kind of an interesting tension in her life, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. And she's trying to juggle, you know, having a superpowered son, trying to have a normal life, trying to keep his secret identity. It's kind of fun. So that's Raising Dion. And then we watched the next movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, another superhero thing, with the kids today. We watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which was super fun. I think the Guardians are their favorite group so far.
The Guardians are just funny.
I had to say, I think Drax is the funniest one in this movie. Yeah. He just has some of the funniest lines. Like, Mantis, look out. This character Mantis gets like pummeled, like labeled, taken out of the scene, literally, by a boulder. And then a beat later, he yells, Mantis, look out. It's just like so funny. And also, this is the one where Quill calls Rocket a trash panda. And I remember the first time I saw that, I thought that was the funniest thing to call a raccoon ever. And so that's from now on, that's what raccoons are to be. They are trash pandas. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many funny moments.
I have to say, watching it with the kids, there were a few cringe moments I was just like, oh, please let that have gone over their head. There's a little bit more crude body humor in this one than I was really comfortable with.
Direct reference to a body part. That sort of thing.
Yeah, there was a little bit more of that than I was comfortable with, frankly, as a parent. I kind of wish it was a bit more kid friendly. So I've got some friends who, when I said that we'd watched it, said, oh, yeah, we skipped the Guardians movies. I can understand that as a judgment call. Everyone, parents got to make it. I think that I'm glad we watched it. It was fun. I can understand why one might want to skip it.
If we were watching these rewatching these before the kids watched them, we might have said on this one.
Yeah.
But it would be hard at this point to say we're not going to watch the next one because so many of these build on each other, for one thing. Like I know one we're not going to watch is Eternals because it wasn't that good of a movie to begin with. And there's a couple of things in that just go even further beyond the line than I'm comfortable with. But yeah, there was a couple of things because it has to do with where Peter Quill came from and his dad, who is this immortal being. And yeah, so that has to come
up. It's very much about fatherhood and him being embodied. And yeah,
but there are themes of family again, Marvel movies, themes about family.
I loved the themes about family in this particular movie, especially. I mean, you've got Quill's dad, Ego, the gigantic super god being.
The super ego.
Right. But then you also have his adopted dad,
Yondu.
I'm
Mary Poppins, y'all.
who is really a fabulous character who has a redemption arc. I love Yondu's redemption arc.
And Yondu is far from perfect, as they say.
Very far from perfect.
Very far from perfect.
But
yet he loved Peter and considered him a son.
Yeah, and I thought that his redemption was absolutely pitch perfect.
Yeah. And then you have Gamora and Nebula, the sisters' arc.
Right. The sisters who were essentially raised by an abusive stepfather, who were pitted against each other, as often happens in abusive families. And so they love each other, but they also resent each other and they don't know how to love because they've been so used to being pitted as enemies. Both of them want to go beyond that enemy relationship, but they don't know how.
Right. Without the enemy, they're not sure what they have.
Right.
They're not sure how to relate.
And yet, you see them both of them longing for the other to be different, for the other to accept. And I really liked the tensions there.
What's funny is like all of the families in this movie are, apart from the one blood relationship, are all sort of
adopted families.
Adoptive. There's another word I'm trying to think of. But yeah, like it's not pseudo family, but you know what I mean? But
the families of choice rather than families of blood.
Right. And you know, they explicitly so. And like there's one point where they even talk about like the bickering among them. But sure, we're family. That doesn't matter.
Right. I mean, I love the fact that the Guardians are a family. They are a family by choice of misfits who've come together and who have decided to trust and love each other. And this movie, I think the first movie is sort of about them coming together, but this movie is about them realizing as a group that they are a family.
Right.
And my favorite moment, I think, is Rocket's moment. I think he gets the best when he decides to cut and run because I can't afford to lose another family member today. That line.
Not when he cuts and runs, when he stops Gamora.
Well, he stops Gamora. That's right. But he's also willing to abandon one family member because I can't lose everybody.
He's going
to
save everybody else.
And for a Rocket who has been essentially an incredibly self-centered, selfish character, to A, acknowledge that they are his family, and B, be willing to sacrifice one for the sake of the rest.
The others, yeah.
Like, it was a really poignant moment, and I loved that Rocket was this crude, rude, self-centered character is able to have that moment of deep humanity.
Right.
Yet another, I love the trope in movies of the alien being, non-human being, who turns out to be more human than a lot of the actual humans. And Rocket is a great example of that trope.
So you also finished Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., all 7 seasons?
I did. I really liked Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., all 7 seasons. In the later seasons, I will grant you, it gets...
Weird
and kind of corny and kind of...
comic booky.
Yeah, but I don't know. Sometimes comic booky bothers me. I really thought that almost all of the decisions they made in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. worked. There were a couple things that quibbles I had that I wish they had gone one way instead of another. But on the whole, I really liked the characters. I liked the choices that they made. I liked the stories that they told. Again, another show about the same sort of idea, a family
of choices.
Of choice. People who have come together, and they're more than just a team, though. They really are family, and yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Family is so important.
I think I watched S.H.I.E.L.D. over time, you know, as it came out episode by episode. I enjoyed it, but I think if I'd watched it like you did all at once, as you know, the one in episode after another without waiting and no time between seasons, I might have came to the same conclusion you did, like the same, I had the same enjoyment that you did. But this being stretched out in between the fifth and the sixth and seventh seasons, there was a huge gap. And I think that where I wasn't even sure whether it was coming back or not. And I think in my mind after the fifth season and there was this question, I kind of had turned it off. Like, I mean, in my head, like I guess it's not coming back. And I, you know, I'm no longer looking forward to it. And so when it did come back, I didn't have the same appreciation.
Right. I think I also was able to see how, even though each season is kind of its own thing, especially to the end, they all did fit together into one sort of mega arc.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that watching them as they came out, that might not have been quite as apparent because they feel at first like they're very disjointed.
Right.
But yeah.
Okay.
I liked it.
And then the final thing we watched together this week, we watched last night, was we watched Dune, the mega movie,
yes.
The Denis Villeneuve epic.
The most recent Dune.
Yes. And so I think we both concluded that it looks fabulous.
It was so gorgeous.
Yeah.
The design, the costumes, the sets.
The cinematography, there were scenes that were just like a painting. It was like just, you want to stop the screen and hang it on the wall. I mean, just gorgeous shots.
Beautiful, well-designed, well-shot movie. On the other hand, I think that this would be a story that would be very hard to follow if you didn't know the books and didn't know the story already. I cannot imagine trying to follow what was going on if I
had never read the books. I read the first book once 30 years ago. So I have a basic framework in my head. Plus, I edited all of the Secrets of Movies and TV Shows episodes that we did a whole series on the various iterations of Dune movies and TV series, miniseries. And so, so I had the framework in my head, but yeah, it's a lot, and it's only the first part of the story.
Right. It's been a long time since I read Dune, but when I was a teen, I read it multiple times. So the characters and a lot of the plot moments are very deeply ingrained, and a lot of it felt very familiar in a sort of, oh yeah, I really liked this scene. I mm-hmm. really liked this moment. But there was a lot that I had forgotten or didn't remember. I remember being surprised as we were watching that they had made the doctor into a woman because it was a male character in the book.
Right.
Which worked. I mean, it was a scene that a choice that I thought.
It didn't feel like, oh, we need to be more woke and have a woman in this role. I don't think it never felt like that. It was just, I think they just went with the best actor that they had available.
Right. And she was
really good.
She was really good. I really liked the woman who played Dr. Leet Keynes. And yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, from my point of view, as someone who has who only read the books once a long time ago, I found some of it a little bit confusing, like the visions of things that were to come, but which maybe are contradictory, like either this bad thing is going to happen or this good thing is. I found that a little confusing, the visions.
Yes.
Also, back to the design, the look of it, I find the sci-fi films which have this bleak, empty design of the world to be kind of like, whether it's Blade Runner or it's this, like these brutalist architecture sort of homes with minimal furniture or no furniture and no decorations, no artwork or whatever. It just feels very inhuman, or there is artwork, but it's very outsized, like those giant mural things. There was no personal art. And it's like, I don't know whether it's a Denis Villeneuve thing or a French filmmaker thing, or I don't know what, but I don't really like that design.
I really liked the look of it. I thought it was beautiful. I wouldn't want to live there.
Right.
But I think that there's a distinction between, like, is this the kind of place that some people, people have houses that I wouldn't want to personally live in, I think, that feel kind of cold and inhuman.
Okay.
So do I buy it as, like, would people build houses that look like this and live in them? Well, sure. I see people building houses that I think are cold and inhuman and living in them all the time. It's.
Yeah. But it seems to be a pattern in certain areas of sci-fi movies.
I suppose.
They're very dystopian feeling futures. That's for sure.
Well, yes. I mean, I really felt one of the things I was noting as we watched that I don't remember catching when I was a much younger and less sophisticated reader is, what a bleak future Dune portrays.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Atreides, who are supposed to be the good guys, are very militaristic. And like the society on every level is very militarized. Like,
and politicized.
And politicized. Like the Atreides, like at one point Duke Leto says, we hold Arrakis by power of sea and land. Like, they don't hold it by
Caladan.
Right. Their homeworld, not by ruling well, but by military might.
By power. Yeah.
It's all about power and power struggles. And there's no non-political mm-hmm. realm of life in that universe.
I suppose that's supposed to contrast with the Fremen, who live by, you know, the connection to the land and to the creatures. And
yes, the Fremen are not as politically motivated, although I think later in the series they do actually have a lot more.
Right.
Yeah, it is very dystopian.
The movie itself, it was good. The Timothy Chalamet as Paul Atreides.
I really liked him. Yeah. He was a great Paul Atreides.
He felt a little young, but maybe that worked. Like you would tell, you kind of convinced me, I think, that younger does work. He's been portrayed older in some of the other adaptations.
I feel like this was true to the book. I don't remember how old he was supposed to be in the book, but I thought that he was supposed to be fairly young.
Yeah, late teens. His mom was a little too hand-wringy, I think we concluded.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't pinpoint where there was any departure from the book, but the overall impression, because I remember her doing the various things, but the overall impression I got from the movie Jessica was that she was less sure of herself than I remember my impression of her in the books.
Like, yeah.
In the books, she's kind of a force to be reckoned with. In the movies, I didn't get, there's a little bit of that, obviously, but she also seems just a little bit less foreboding.
I feel like Jason Momoa and Gurney Halleck, he also played Thanos. What is his name? I forget. Never going to remember the actor's name. Anyway, they both were fine, but they didn't get a lot of time.
You know, I feel like that's kind of a flaw in the book, too, though.
Yeah.
In the book, Paul has multiple male
role model friends.
Figures yeah. who are a part of his father's circle of friends and his household, I guess.
Yeah.
And it gives a sense of kind of a richness in his life.
Household retainers, essentially. Yeah.
Right. And I like the fact that there are so many of them. But honestly, even from the books, I remember not really being able to keep them all straight.
Right.
And I guess that's sort of true in the movie, too. It's kind of hard to keep who everybody is, and they don't get a lot of time.
Right.
Mostly what I got from it is a sense of Paul having this sort of thick, rich world of not being around other kids, but being around this adult household.
Yeah. And Oscar Isaac as Duke Leto, I thought was really good.
Oh, I loved him. He was great.
Yeah, he was really good. Stellan Skarsgård was unrecognizable as Baron Harkonnen.
I was shocked. I was like, wait, that was Stellan Skarsgård? I had no idea.
There were so many people from the MCU in it. So Stellan Skarsgård, you had Dave Bautista as the other Harkonnen. You had Oscar Isaac, who's going to be Moon Knight. And then there was someone else. Anyway, but just, well, no, not Momoa. He's in DC. But you get all these people coming over from MCU. It was kind of funny. So Dune, and long, and I hate to say, I kind of started to fall asleep at the end, so I missed the last scene. We have to watch that again.
It was a long movie.
2.5 hours, so.
And yet it felt almost not quite long enough to actually do the story justice.
Well, it obviously wasn't, because there's more to come. It wasn't started as seeing part one, so I'm hoping it was successful enough that they are going to make the at least part two.
Right.
So that's what we've been watching. Let's wrap up by talking about something you mentioned before. You were having a good conversation with the girls this morning.
Which caused me to almost forget Ben.
Yes. So what was that about?
So the girls, they're both teens now, and we've talked about before, they're more active socially online now with
homeschooling.
The Homeschool Connections Cafe. And so now they're starting to encounter a lot more directly sort of the teen culture and encountering friends who are struggling mm-hmm. with various things that
teens
struggle with. You know, friends who are struggling with self-image, friends who are struggling with family issues, with, you know, losing family members and grief. And so we were talking, they kind of mentioned that they had some friends who were struggling with body image issues. And this is not something that my girls have really encountered before. So we were having a really interesting conversation about, like, how we our ideas of beauty are shaped by the culture at large, and how the culture has a very distorted understanding of beauty. And Gosh, it was kind of a conversation that was very wide ranging and went all over the place. But it was
one of the things I liked was the part where you guys were talking about the difference for today, how we perceive beauty today versus the way it would have been in the past. You know, today we get our images of beauty from the media, actors and actresses and, you know, and they all have
advertisements.
Yeah, yeah. And they all have these impossible standards of beauty. You know, like everyone in a movie is attractive. You know, there are no unattractive people unless they are purposefully unattractive because they're the bad guy or something. Whereas in real life, you have a range of attractiveness. And one of the things I've been talked to people about a lot was like this idea that and then we talked about this. You know, if you lived in a medieval village, your world of people you were exposed to, there were no photographs, you know, and there were paintings, but the paintings were not photorealistic.
And if you were a villager, you probably didn't have a huge.
You knew about 30, 40, maybe a couple hundred people.
And your experience of art was probably art in your local church, which may or may not be. I mean, even if it's of the highest quality, it's not the same.
It's not photorealistic.
Right.
Right. So your sense of what the way people looked would have been shaped by the couple hundred people you were closest to, including family members. And so. You know, you didn't have these impossible standards that we have now. And I think a lot of people, adults included, who end up alone or unhappy or just sort of, you know, never connecting with someone, never finding someone they're attracted to is because they've created in their mind this idea that I'm only attracted to the sort of people that I'm seeing in the media as opposed to this person who's here in front of me, who's a regular person, who's attractive in their own self, but not, you know, Chris Hemsworth or Scarlett Johansson, you know, but are just a regular person who is a perfectly attractive person.
Right. When we talked about also, you know, God made each and every one of us and loves us as we are and finds us good and beautiful as we are. God's standards are definitely not human standards and vice versa. We don't judge people based on how God would see them.
Right.
So it was a really good conversation. Yeah. I love teens are such a great age for actually really being able to dive into topics like that.
We were coming home from Scouts the other day and I was talking to the girls about social media and how some of the other girls are online in various social media places. And our girls, they only have the homeschool cafe. And so it was like, I don't want to be on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, or any of those places, because it just sounds like too much work. And like they've heard from some of their homeschool friends about the other social media places and how toxic it can be for especially teen girls.
Right.
You know, the Instagram is a huge element to that, or it's Snapchat or any of these other visual ones where it's about posting pictures and having the perfect picture and certain pose or certain makeup or looks. And then, you know, if your friends don't like it, if you're one of the friends and you don't like, you know, put enough hearts and likes on things, well, then you're not a good friend and you get ostracized and. Oh, and then the bullying and all that other stuff. And it's like, and Sophie's like, that just sounds exhausting. I don't care. I don't want to do any of that. And
I'm very grateful for the Homeschool Connections Cafe as an introduction to social media, which isn't, I mean, I'm sure it's not perfect. I'm sure there's some things that are slipped through, but it is moderated by adults.
Heavily moderated by adults, yeah.
Heavily moderated by adults. And it's a sort of self-selecting group of teens from, you know, they're mostly homeschooled kids from Catholic families. And I'm sure it's not perfect. I know that they've said that there was some bullying and one child was asked to leave the cafes. So it's a human environment. It's not going to be without problems. But
frankly, it's worth the price of admission, even if the kids didn't take classes at Homeschool Connections.
I've been really pleased with it as a venue for them to get their feet wet in social media without diving into the deep end.
and for getting some social interaction with other kids.
Gosh, because, yeah, homeschooling for teens is hard. I would love for there to be more local teen groups for them to participate in, but there's just really nothing very local. I know your sister, when her kids hit the teen years, started a teen youth group that met at her house because there was nothing out there for her girls to right. do. That's just but not.
This, it's far away from us, and it's not. There's nothing like that around here.
It's not really feasible there's, for me. I don't really have room or time or energy or talent, frankly, for hosting that sort of gathering. I mean, if
right, even if we wanted to host, there's no room in our house for.
And
hosting.
We don't have. I mean, she had a co-op of kids to draw from that right. they were already friends with, and we have, for lots of various reasons, just not developed friendships with people who are geographically
there just doesn't seem close. To be a lot of homeschooling families, Catholic homeschooling families in this area, this direct area. It just, yeah. So, but so they have this, and that's been good. And it's just the key, I think, is to keep the lines of communication open. I mean, we still struggle a bit with things like technology addiction, not addiction, but, you know, the use of technology and stuff like that, trying to work out with them and without in us, frankly, the right use of technology and that sort of thing.
It's hard. And I'm yeah. sure we are making mistakes. I am positive oh, yeah. that we've made mistakes and will continue to make mistakes because we don't grow up with any guidelines for how to do this. And it's not like my own use of social media is always healthy.
Right. Yeah. We both struggle with it, too. And I mean, I look. Yeah, I mean, we've definitely made mistakes, and we've some regrets of things that we should have done before, and we can maybe share those at some point. Some of the lessons learned, but I think in general, it's lines of communication open. Talk frankly about this stuff.
And frankly, I tell them, look, I make mistakes, and sometimes I'm going to tell you, you know, do as I say, not as I do, because I am not a great role model in all of this stuff. And I want you to learn from some of my mistakes. Mm-hmm. I try not to paint myself as perfect and say, look, I'm going to flub this sometimes.
Right. But they have good hearts and they're really empathetic toward others. And that's a big part for them.
And one thing I really love is the fact Isabella has said that she's really learned this last year, the value of intercessory prayer and having a community of people who pray for each other. And that is a really amazing lesson for a teen to learn, that to be a part of a community of people, of teens who pray for each other and support each other in difficult times, that's so important. And that's something I certainly didn't really have as a teen that I really value.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It's gorgeous to have her say, you know, at family prayers, and pray for this person and this person and this person who are going through this and that and the other thing. And it's really developed her empathy, but also her feeling that prayer is real, that it makes real difference in people's lives. She's felt the difference in her own life when her friends have prayed for her. And so she knows that her prayers really do matter and make a difference to her friends.
You know, being a teen can be a time where you get very self-centered and very inward focused.
Right.
But it could also be a time where you become other focused and you start to notice the world around you and the people around you, and they become important in and of themselves. And I think that's very true in our girls, that they were starting to do that outwardly noticing and focusing. And that's good. That's good. All right. We should wrap things up before I turn into a pumpkin. It is getting yeah, late for me. Late. So we do want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Chris E., James S., Jonathan H., Ryan Z., and Paul E. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. Find links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Send us your feedback at the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or send an email to bets@sqpn.com, BETTS. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.
Yeah.